G'day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Infomoto podcast presented by Autoglym.
Autoglym.
The best car and motorcycle care products on the planet. You can take that to the bank, can't you, Snag?
Yeah, take that to the bank.
Snag and Spanner in the studio as always, your hosts. How you going, boys?
I'm going great, thanks, Spence.
Riding?
Very well, thank you, Spence.
Yeah?
Hmm.
What have you been riding, boys?
Well, regular readers, viewers, listeners, Grant?
Ah, yes.
Will know that I've traded in my XR, which was a magnificent bike, and bought myself a GS. So I've madly been riding around on that. In fact, I've put 10,000 Ks on it since I got it, which was a couple of months ago, something like that. Loving it. Absolutely loving it. And I've been riding the Monster SP a bit around the place.
That's right.
And I'll have more to say about that. About to get off my date and write a very significant road test on that. So that's me, really.
You're still getting around on your yellow GS there, Spanner, I see.
Yeah, the old 1150 is going well, but I've had a few successes in my own shed recently, and almost all the bikes in there now are running, including my fabulous...
I'll believe it when I see it.
Well, my fabulous Honda 50 stepped through.
That's going.
It's rocketing around Castlemaine, yeah. Terrorising old people and the police.
Is it as quick as you remember it?
It's the slowest thing I think I've ever ridden. I can't believe there was a time in my life when I thought it was adequate.
But you're not going anywhere, so.
No. Unfortunately, from my place down to the CBD is downhill. So it fills me with false confidence. And then I have to get it back up the hill on the way home, which hasn't involved running alongside it yet. But I don't discount that that'll happen in the future.
Did you put a new motor in it?
Bits of a new motor. It's a Bushman's axe.
It is, yeah.
15 handles and
5 frames.
Yep. But look, it still looks great, and it's just a lovely bike.
And you get all reminiscent and come over all gooey, do you?
Yeah, I do. I'm just pleased it can't talk because it witnessed some periods of my life which I'd prefer to be kept
Well, actually, quiet. That means I probably shouldn't be able to talk because I've had the same experience with you.
Really?
I've been a lot of places you've been.
Yes, okay, all right. Well, let's be nice to each other.
Right, we won't hurt each other.
All right, yep.
So you must have, if you've done all this with your, been out in the shed, you're notoriously in the shed, but you're also notoriously ineffective in the shed. So
well,
what happened?
Only because I'm busy. You know, there's a lot of things on the plate, but it's great to be able to devote a bit of time and effort and sustained time in the shed because it's amazing what you can get done.
Yes.
Really, I've had some good successes. The thing about my shed, though, of course, is that none of the bikes that I own or maintain or will own in the future are going to be appearing at EICMA this year.
No, I don't.
Nice segue, Spanner Man. Beautifully.
Working
well done.
Beautiful, Grant.
So it's new bike reveal season. It seemed to have crept up on us really quick this year. November 7th.
Oh, it's important for other reasons, November 7th, but I can't remember what. Anyway, we won't touch on that. Keep on going.
EICMA. The International Motorcycle Show in Milan, where all the major motorcycle manufacturers reveal next year's flock, I guess you could say, of our new product. But we already know these guys, they can't help but drip feed information ahead of the official public debut at EICMA. Overnight lobbed the new Triumph Trident 660, which is coming in full power, guys.
Good move, Triumph. Very good move. I always thought that bike would do well here in full power. In fact, I thought it was a bit of a mistake not to bring a full power Trident in the first place. So I'm very pleased to hear that. I think that'll go all right.
Definitely. I feel the same way. It's 14,250 in lambs or
well, that's
power.
Right in the hole there, isn't it?
Absolutely. And you get a six-axis IMU, which is kind of unheard of in this segment, at least in that sort of price category. So lean angle sensitive, cornering ABS and cornering traction control. So that's significant. You also get another rider mode, and we've got some big piston front forks. So a pretty good update.
Quite a sophisticated motorcycle.
Spence, are they selling it alongside the Lambs model?
Absolutely, yeah, at the same price.
And the Lambs model's got the same equipment?
Everything's the same. It's just literally a tune. So 40 kilowatts, 59 newton meters for the Lambs guys, and 60 kilowatts, 63 newton meters, and that works out to
not quite,
but almost 100 horsepower. Yeah. So that's cool. We've also got a few things, sort of speculative stuff. Yamaha's teasing the long-awaited R9. So it's sort of a similar treatment as the R7, which was born of the MT-07, and we believe the R9 will be born of the MT-09 naked bike. So a fairing, upgraded suspension, probably upgraded electronics. Who really knows? None of this is official as yet, but the writing's on the wall, I think. And yeah, that's sort of an interesting thing. It's not quite a leader bike, but almost.
Yeah, it seems to be becoming less important, the categories. They're kind of making it up as they go along. It doesn't have to be 1,000 anymore.
It feels that way.
Or a 1,200.
What else? KTM overnight, new 1390s. So that's that covers the Super Adventure bike and the Super Duke GT Sports Tourer, which is a really cool thing. Also, KTM is releasing an automatic transmission, and these things just keep coming from everywhere. Yamaha's got their YAMT, BMW's R1300 GSA. It's going to be available with an automatic transmission. Honda's got one out. They call it an e-clutch, but it all seems to be essentially the same technology. So these bikes without a clutch, I don't think this is the last we'll see of them. They seem to be popping up everywhere. And look, these guys do a lot of research in the market. They don't make new transmissions for no reason. But my question is, who's asking for this?
It's a bloody good question.
Who doesn't want a clutch?
I don't know. None of my mates are walking and going, that clutch annoys the shiter out of me.
I wish I didn't have to change gears as much when I'm riding.
Yeah, and with a quick shifter anyway, you only need the clutch to start. Maybe that's the point.
Isn't one of the joys of motorcycling, though, sneaking up through the gearbox? It's one of the...
Correct.
Rev match.
Yeah, rev matching...
I guess a rev match must be lost without a clutch. Surely it must be an automatic.
Well, it'd be doing it itself.
Yeah. But I guess they do anyway, don't they?
What did strike me was that I think there's a possibility of some conquest marketing via this, in that we probably all know that there's a generation or the growth of automatic transmissions in cars, and there's people that have never seen a clutch. So if you're moving to younger people, who wouldn't even consider driving a manual car, and you say, oh, don't worry, it's not a manual, maybe there's conquest market there. That was the only thing that struck me.
This is, I guess, because I run the risk of having a bit of sounding like I've got a bit of bravado here, but...
Perish the thought.
Buy a scooter. if you can't use a
clutch. You've got to come along with the time, Spence. Stuck in your old ways.
I run the risk of being an old man yells at cloud.
Welcome to our world, Grant.
Yeah, welcome to our world.
Good to have you, Spence.
Yes. What surprises me a little bit is that this has got to be segmented market driven, in as much as if you go to Europe and hire a car, it's a manual. If you ask for an automatic, it takes ages for them to find one.
You can still get entry-level cars with manual transmissions.
I can't imagine that.
All the high cars in Europe are manual.
Is that right?
Correct.
That's strange, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And that's why I say it's kind of market-specific. I'm with you. I just don't understand why someone would walk into a motorcycle shop in Australia and say, show me all the automatics you've got.
Yes. Especially when it would make more sense to me if these automatic transmissions, e-clutches, whatever they want to call it, were starting to come out on learner-approved bikes, but they're coming out on the MT-09 sports bike. That thing's an animal, clutch or no. 1390 KTMs, R1300 GSA, these are serious performance motorcycles.
But they will have manual overrides, so you'll still be able to. It'll be an automatic, but you'll be able to.
But they don't have a clutch on them. There's no clutch. There's not even a lever.
No, but you can change gears when you feel like it. I mean, you can set it so
You can set it so like a quick shifter.
Yeah, yeah. So you can stay in the gear if you want to. You don't have, it doesn't, you, it's not like a 62 Falcon where it changed from its first gear into its second gear every time you went down a hill.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not going to do that. So
it'll be more sophisticated.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And it'll still allow rider input if you want it to.
Mm.
So forgive my ignorance, I should know more about this, but does that mean when you pull up at a set of lights, as you would in an automatic car, there's a disengagement of the transmission from the flywheel?
Yes.
Right. So you just, and then you just take off like on a CVT scooter?
I gather. But then I mean, you change gear, I haven't ridden you? One, and I haven't actually spoken to any engineers about this. So
we've got to learn about
yeah,
this.
Yeah, we have to. But it's all new. It's all sort of in the last couple of months. It's all of a sudden seems to be a mainstream thing. KTM, Yamaha, BMW, Honda.
Well, the Africa Twin had one for a while.
That's right, actually. The Honda kind of actually pioneered this. The NT1100.
FJR 1300, if I remember rightly, like 10 years ago. Correct. Was the first one.
Correct.
But the take-up on that was, this is anecdotal evidence, so it doesn't count for much, but I know people had kind of trouble with it, like around roundabouts and stuff like that, where it would, if you're in a sportier mode, it'd hunt for a gear that's too aggressive, or maybe you don't get that gear you need. And so I think it's over time.
Plus, in Australia, they didn't sell any.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't know.
Well,
I sold a handful, but nothing like the number that they sold.
Certainly not everywhere.
Conventional bike. Yeah.
It was seen as a bit of a novelty, I think.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's not a novelty now, though. Spencer's quite right. If these manufacturers are going to the trouble to actually produce the hardware, they clearly can sell them.
Yeah, they know something we don't.
But
they're not. They haven't been selling them in Australia. The motivation is probably some other market.
Well, Australia is very, very rarely the motivation for any market.
Correct. So we end up with things
that... We're just little players, aren't we?
Yeah, we end up with things that we would never design ourselves for this market or for Australian conditions.
But I will look into it because I'm interested in things like the R1300 GSA. That means that this system...
R1300 GSA.
R1300 GSA. That's what I said, didn't I?
I thought you said 1200.
Yeah, no, 1300.
1300.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry, my apologies.
Well, we can edit that out. You're living in the past, Spence.
Yeah.
Says you. What do you got?
Okay, well, moving right along.
It is hot in here.
Yeah.
I'm just interested to see how that works in the bush.
Yeah. Any other surprises?
Oh, yeah, enough of that. Have you?
Anything that you were a little bit surprised to read about? Or hear about in
CF
advance?
Well, CFMoto 675 triple is sort of something. Yep. Aprilia's got this really cool... they're making like a handful of them, but they're calling it a bridge to MotoGP. A really, like basically a race replica. I don't know if you saw this thing, but it looks pretty mega.
No, I'm across this, yeah. Closest thing you can get to a MotoGP bike.
So they say. I just don't know how to pronounce it is all.
how's it spelled?
RSV4 XXMA, except the E in XMA is with a 3.
It wouldn't be XMA, would it?
I don't reckon, eh? Yeah. Might be.
You don't reckon it'd be eczema?
Eczema.
I don't think so.
I don't know. You put a bit of ointment on that, wouldn't you?
Yep, you would. Yep.
Yeah, 30 numbered examples, but what's significant about it is it's actually like downforce producing aero.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's what is it called? Ground effect. Ground effect, like the way Formula One's grip the road. So I guess it's like a vacuum underneath it, or like suction thing?
It's been the one thing that's been missing from commuter bikes in Australia, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Ground effects.
Yeah, my problem is I just need some downforce when I'm stuck behind a tram in Sydney Road.
Correct, yeah. Or basically riding anywhere in Australia.
Yeah.
Well, it makes 230 horsepower, 165 kilograms.
Yep.
God, save us.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, yeah. I mean, did you say 30? They're making 30 of them?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we'll be lucky to see one in Australia.
Totally.
If we do, it'll never have any Ks on it. It'll be in someone's lounge room or, you know, a showroom somewhere.
Yeah.
You just cannot use a bike like that in Australian conditions. No.
But there's always been a hero bike. I understand why manufacturers bring out some exclusivity. It keeps people fizzing and speaking about the brand, they don't care. They're never going to make any money on a bike that they're selling 30 of. That's going to cost them a fortune to produce.
It's been one of the great things about working in the motorcycle media industry, Greg, as you well know, that we would get those bikes for 3 weeks and then we could give them back.
Yes. Steaming and smelling and
yeah, but we'd have the experience, which the novelty hadn't worn off by the time we returned the bike, but we were returning it. We didn't have to put up with the fact that if you wanted bread and milk, you had to fire up 260 horsepower.
Yes, and the exorbitant price that they were always at.
Oh yes, yeah.
But yeah, some of that stuff was pretty stupid.
Well, yeah.
But look, good luck to them. I like seeing hero bikes. I think it's a great thing that we have people aspiring to that stuff. They're never going to have mainstream appeal. They'll never make the company a lot of money and they'll never have volume production. But they're there as look at us.
I believe in that though. I like that.
Yeah, I do like too.
Fizz is important. Excitement around a brand is important.
Agreed.
And it makes you feel better even if you're on a middleweight. Say you're on a, for example, an RS457 or a Touareg 660 or any Aprilia model. Seeing a hero model makes you proud of your motorcycle, I think.
Yes. Which reminds me, RS457.
Oh, yeah, riding that next weekend.
You're
that
going
must be why on, I thought of it.
You're going on the Australian launch of that bike next week.
Indeed. So
another middleweight sports
lightweight,
bike.
Lightweight, I would say. Lightweight 457.
Yeah. Anything with a 4.
They got that Kawasaki inline four cylinder in that sort of segment, among other things. I don't know too much about it, to be honest.
Well, that's good. We'll hear about that in the next podcast.
Totally. Look, it's probably a little bit early for a full EICMA preview, but I'll be burning the midnight oil at the Infomoto studios, keeping everyone up to date with what's going on in the industry.
That's a great little period for Infomoto. I think, blowing our own trumpet, we do the EICMA review and preview more comprehensively than anybody else.
It's a big focus of our brand,
yeah,
for sure.
And I enjoy you becoming entirely nocturnal for about 2 weeks.
Yeah, coffee.
I just push pizzas under the door and coffee, and Spencer, I hear him swearing.
I get a bit goblinish, you know, like my
so I know he's there.
Yeah, it's an important event, isn't it, in that it does give you an idea of what everyone is thinking about and what they're thinking about for the immediate and medium-term future.
Yes. Totally. I remember during COVID we were speaking and we thought that perhaps the physical show was on the way out, and I guess maybe it is, but at the moment people are taking EICMA very seriously. There's a lot of presence at EICMA and people definitely wait for EICMA. To reveal products.
And keep an eye on EICMA next year, because Infomoto, with a bit of luck, will be on site.
Yeah, definitely.
What are we releasing?
We're going to go over there, the Infomoto frontline team. If someone pulls out, we'll give you a yell.
Yep, thanks.
and business class, of course, up the
front. Business class.
Yes.
Strapped to the wing.
You know, via China, we'll get a long way round. But yeah, we'd like to get on the ground. I've been to a couple of these and they... disregarding the fact that it's just heaven on a stick for a motorcycle enthusiast, you really are at the cutting edge of the stuff when you're there talking to the people, getting a real feel for where we're going in the motorcycle industry. So it is an extremely important event.
In the context of what you were saying, Spence, about hero bikes and their role, things have changed a bit in that the economy of motorcycle manufacturing and the pace of technical change now means that it's not as prevalent as it used to be.
You mean like your race replica type thing?
Yeah, and the range. And Honda went through a period where if somebody thought of a configuration, it would appear in the Honda catalogue within 6 months. Nothing was too outrageous.
The Rune comes to mind.
The Rune, yeah. But even things like the CX500, nobody thought Honda would ever do anything like that.
No, no.
And any time they thought something might be interesting, they gave
it a fly.
They had enough money and they had enough time and they had the engineering skills to actually create it.
Yeah, good point.
Look at Honda today, it's far more focused on what it thinks is going to sell.
Quite conservative.
Well, I don't know whether it's conservative or, you could argue it's just economically sensible.
That's called conservativity.
Conservativity.
Is that a word?
I don't think so.
Conservation. That's not right either.
Oh, it's so good when Snag fucks one up.
But look, I was thinking about it.
we'll edit that out.
No, we won't.
I was thinking about it in the context of Royal Enfield, which made the quite, I think at the time, courageous decision to focus on bikes between 350cc and 750cc. Mm. And they said, that's our market segment. That's what we're going to be focusing on. And a lot of people thought, well, if they're going to ignore the bigger, more powerful bikes, they're going to get left behind. But it hasn't happened.
No, it hasn't happened. In fact, they've been very busy with releases, and they've been very clever with, particularly with the 650 range.
Yeah,
I think Enfield.
They have. Sorry to interrupt you, Snag. They have a new bike coming every quarter for the next 2 years.
Yeah, that's pretty. That's pretty significant.
Well, except are they going to be derivatives of the existing packages?
Or? Not nearly as much as you would. Not as modular as you would think. Yes, you will see that 450 liquid cooled engine again. Yes, you'll see that 650 twin engine again. Yes, you'll see the 350 motor again. But serious chassis changes. You know, unique bikes, not just a styling exercise.
Yeah, well, they've done a good job with it, haven't they?
Totally.
I mean, you look at the Himalayan, for example, which started off as being a pretty good bike anyway, but now the current 450 iteration of it is being very well received.
Oh, yeah, I've really enjoyed riding that thing.
And the Gorilla?
Yeah, Gorilla, the same sort of thing.
And they're 450s.
Yeah, but ride-by-wire, liquid-cooled.
And yeah. Something in LA soon.
Yeah, under embargo.
Not allowed to talk about it, but Spencer's off to LA. We're allowed to talk about you being off to LA, aren't
we? Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So off he goes on the Big Bird.
Yeah, to...
exciting stuff.
Big Bear Lake.
I'm going to Rosebud.
I'm going to Werribee.
Yeah, I've got there's a step-through launch.
Send me a postcard, will you? By snail mail. No, look, I only bring Royal Enfield up because I think it was courageous of them to make that decision, and they've done a really good job with it. And you look at companies like CF Moto who aren't going to be doing the same thing. They're on a different trajectory.
Totally. It's hard to preempt anything CF Moto does, but they're active.
Yeah.
But extremely active.
Yeah. What they've been is price competitive with Royal Enfield.
Well, massively so.
And of course, anybody in that field is now price competitive as well. And that's the other thing about Royal Enfield, that their pricing's been great. They've enabled people to get new bikes of very good quality for not too much money.
Mm-hmm. When I was on the Royal Enfield Gorilla launch in Barcelona, that bike sort of naturally competes with Triumph Speed 400.
Yep.
And Scrambler 400, they're also made in India. And as you know, the drinks started flowing and everyone got a bit more honest, they were saying at Royal Enfield, they're like, there's no way Triumph are making any money on that thing, the way they've priced it. There's just no way.
Yep.
So it could be one of those things of Triumph going, no, we want a bit of Royal Enfield here.
Mm.
So, I mean, that's all, again, anecdotal stuff. Mm. But
I like the idea of that 400 too. That
it's a good thing.
Yeah, I like the idea of that.
Yeah.
Which one?
Indian built single.
The Triumph.
It's a Speed 400 and a Scrambler.
No, I like the idea. I've never ridden one, but I like its general thrust. The whole idea of a smaller, you know, 400 makes sense to me for a bit of fun.
Definitely.
Really easy to live with, you know, round town. If you were commuting, what a great bike.
Yeah.
And so that brings me, can I move a little bit to this, that we are seeing smaller capacity motorcycles, particularly the middleweight sports market, the growth area within – it's a growth category, isn't it?
You tested – you're talking things like the Daytona that you rode
Daytona 660
months ago or something. Yeah, we just put the video out recently.
Yeah, that's got the Trident motor with more power.
Mm.
There's also things like Suzuki's GSX-8 R and S.
Yep.
Kawasaki's got the –
yep, Z650 naked, but we're talking fared bikes here.
Yes.
So the big one in that category would be the R7.
And the R7,
but,
that's right.
I mean, I don't know if you've had what your thoughts are now, but I remember when you got back from that Daytona launch, you were like, this is the pick, just on price and spec.
Yeah, price and spec, and also finish.
Yeah.
It's delightfully finished. It's a good sports bike. The sort of power I can wring its neck and still be safe and still travel at a reasonable speed. The big leader bikes are on the nose.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, they're just too powerful. I do not need 200 horsepower.
I don't have more fun on them than I do middleweights.
Well, white knuckles don't thrill me anymore. Whereas with that Daytona, it handled well enough and had enough power. It was adequate is often a word people use in a disparaging manner. And adequate is not disparaging in this case. It works. It does what it says on the tin. It's just not excessive. And that, I think, is what people have come to understand both price-wise and performance-wise. And that's why we see middleweight sports bikes. And they're not as ridiculously sporty as we're used to. Remember Blades and GSXRs? They all had one. I'm not going to besmirch just...
you mean they had 600 versions of them?
Yeah, 600 versions. And they changed every year. Yep. You know, they chamfered out 2 grams from a valve stem.
And they were hugely popular for quite a few years.
Hard to ride, hard to live with.
Oh, yeah.
Discomfort-wise. Now, I noticed particularly with the GSX-8 and the 660, they are a sporty seating position, but quite reasonably comfortable.
Yeah.
It's not that killer.
Sort of mid-forward.
Yeah, so you can actually ride them over a distance and survive the bloody thing.
Yeah.
And so does your license. It's just pragmatic on all fronts.
The use, too, of twin-cylinder engines now as well.
Whoever saw that coming?
Well,
parallel twins, remember?
That was all you could get for a while, and then everyone laughed at them, and now they're back. Yeah. And they're back because they're cheap to produce.
Yeah. And they're very
cheap
efficient.
To service, too, yep. Right?
Yep. You know, the head sophistication, cam timing and all that is much better now than it used to be.
Yeah.
That they work.
Yeah. But inexpensive to produce relative to V-twins, relative to cross-the-line fours.
Yeah. And hyper-modular. You can put one hyper-modular, in an adventure bike, naked bike, or sports bike.
Which everyone's doing.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah, it's a narrow, it takes up a narrow area in the frame, so it can go into.
Yeah, and you can lean them forward and back a bit, can't you, Spanner?
Absolutely, yeah.
So you can fit the chassis you want for the application, you know. Obviously, you have to have a bit of a different rake and trail and stuff with an adventure bike, and it also allows you to move the weight of the engine to different places depending on how the bike's set up dimensionally.
Yep. Yes. So you can have quite a different bike with the same engine.
Yeah.
As, you know, a cruiser, perhaps.
Yeah, we've seen that. Like, some bikes with the same motor will feel completely different.
In my limited circle of acquaintances, the current answer to if you could only own one bike question is still the Suzuki 650 V-Strom.
Yeah.
And half the people I know who own their own bikes have one in their shed.
Well, that would be my answer to that question too.
Yeah, me too. Me too. It's sort of boringly so. You know?
Well, I don't know.
Well, once again, adequate is a disparaging word. And you know, that bike ticks every box of adequacy.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think it's a good thing.
And if you want a reference for it, Mick Hone, who can ride anything he feels like.
Well, really. He's riding an 800 now, because I borrowed it the other day.
Yeah. Yeah. But when he decided he was going to ride around Australia and he cast his eye across his own showroom, he took a V-Strom 650.
Yeah. And he still says it was a great decision.
Yep.
He's riding the 800 now, but for the same reasons.
Yeah.
The 800 exactly. DE is probably a slightly better bike.
Yeah.
But the same motivation.
Twin rather than they're both twins, but a parallel twin than an L-twin.
The 800 DE is a good bike.
Yeah.
It's a very good motorcycle.
Yeah, it is good.
Isn't it annoying at the moment that the FCAI isn't releasing sales figures? And specific model figures.
Spencer gets sales figures, don't you?
No. Oh. Yes, Bannerman, it is annoying. You get the vaguest summary of
the
market.
You get brands.
You get now it's even worse. It's you get total sales for off-road, road, OHV, off-highway vehicles, side-by-sides and ATVs. And you get no market breakdown. And Royal Enfield, CF Moto, Polaris, yep, they don't
subscribe.
Yep. So, and they're I feel like they've got a pretty big foothold.
Yeah, I think the estimate's around 20%. Well, there you go. Missing from the figures.
It almost nullifies the data without.
Well, they used to release individual model sales.
Yeah, yeah.
So you know we're having a conversation about how everyone's buying smaller capacity bikes. We can't prove it now.
Yeah, it forces us to speculate.
But a few years ago, we could actually nominate the bikes that people were buying, how many they were buying, where they were buying them from.
Mm.
What would be the motivation for not releasing those?
Well, so that, I mean, I hope I don't get this wrong, but the manufacturers have to subscribe to FCAI, so there has to be a partnership there. And I guess with the emerging companies, they wanted to keep quiet about their data.
And so not all subscribe.
I think it kind of, right? Yeah. No,
that's right.
And yeah. I think they kind of set a precedent, you know, Royal Enfield, yep, well, we're not doing it.
If you're only getting half the market.
It. Why should everyone else do it? Why should everyone else be transparent when the rest of the market isn't? So fair, I guess, enough. It's kind of a snowball effect.
Understood.
And if you release a bike and it's a dud, it reflects on the entire brand, so that telling people how few people actually bought this particular.
Yeah, well, yes, that's the risk you run in, well, transparency. But it can equally have its benefits if you put out something that does really well. So put out something that does really well, eh?
But the market's always been distorted by price-leading bikes.
Street 500, remember that? That was at the top of the list for 5 years or something. Yeah,
should be at the bottom of the bay now.
Absolute
cast iron hang glider.
Yeah, but what do we know? It's, as you say, it sold. It was the best selling 500cc and under bike. Yeah,
Hitler was popular
for 5 years.
Snag's popular.
I'm popular. Yeah. There you go. Well, that puts a light of all that, doesn't it? Moving on.
But any manufacturer that is able – oh, Honda was another good example with that 125 that
– Oh, yeah. CB.
CB 125E.
That's a good bike.
Well, not really.
Well, it's a bulletproof little Honda. You've got a Honda 50 step through that you keep telling me is all right.
But there's – I with Spanner on this because in theory they're the same thing. But the Cub has style. It's an elegant thing in it.
Adequacy.
Adequacy.
Oh, viva la adequacy. This is one of my favourite words now.
The Honda CB125 in 1972 was faster, lighter, cheaper.
Same motor probably, was it?
No, completely different motor. Yeah.
Okay.
But it was when Honda was, you know, making really good bikes. And if you put it up against the CB125E now, it'd trash it. But the thing is, the 125E is being built to a price and for a specific purpose. And when they released it, it was something like 2,300 right away.
It's still in the 2,000s, isn't it?
I think it's over 3 now. Oh, are they still selling it? I'm not even sure.
That's highway robbery.
Oh, absolutely.
I think it was replaced by the F a couple of years ago, boys.
Come on, Grant.
The CB125F.
I think the E made way for the F, possibly.
Yeah, I think that might have been the 250, but anyway, let's not. Yeah,
anyway, I love how our experts know everything.
We've researched. We've researched this to a
never
standstill.
Never missed it. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, man.
Anyway, the point is that Honda's sales figures look really good as a brand because every food delivery guy in Australia was riding around on a 125E,
yep,
on hire purchase.
But we've always been able to read through that. I remember when we used to get all those figures when I was working in magazines. Remember them?
Yeah.
Free publishing?
Yep.
We used to break it down and you'd be able to read through, oh, yeah, there's a, you know, 1,500 postie bikes in there. Well, you'd know, well, you discount that. What's the next one? And I think the market's smart enough if they were putting out that information to, or we could explain.
Yeah.
Extrapolate.
Yep.
That, you know, this is the case. But a lack of transparency is never a good thing.
No, I don't think it's good for anyone.
No.
There's also, I was going to say, the numbers can be inflated and stuff as well because they get a big shipment in, you know. Often there might be a bike that would be selling really well if they add them,
yeah,
which I know is a point of frustration for a lot of the OEMs.
Yeah, yeah. And when they're delivered, how many are delivered. But when you're smart, you can work your way through that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a shame we don't get that. I actually didn't realize we don't.
No.
Well, it makes
you still get something, but it's just so broad
and dry.
You have to really speculate, and it's to the point now where I feel like I'm reaching, and if I'm reaching, then what hope has the reader got?
Well, yeah, but what we're doing now is what we did many, many years ago, which is just notice what's on the road.
Mm.
What are people actually riding?
Mm. Mm.
Lots. What I do see a lot of now is young guys on middleweight 40s, ninjas and stuff like that, and there's a whole group of people. There's a little shop near me.
Highside?
Highside Merchants of Speed. And, you know, it was a little shop opened up in Baldwin, and I thought, got no hope here. Well, every Saturday and Sunday, there's 40, 50 bikes out
there. Yeah.
And they're having coffees and they're all talking
brick and mortar, independent motorbike shop. It's something you just don't see anymore. So no. I respect those guys for doing that.
And they're guys and girls. They're in their 20s. They've got reasonable bikes, but they're loud and they're hotting them up and they're talking motorbikes. And it just it gladdens my old heart to see that there is a group of young people coming up. Yeah. Which I thought we had a dearth of. I couldn't see where
it was the looking next grim. Market it was looking grim from. for a while there.
Yeah. So I'm rapt that there's a new group and at Infomoto we will embrace them.
Definitely.
And they're buying bikes under 10 grand, not Fireblades for 55,000-60,000.
And they've all got the bloody exhaust on that, you know. And
yeah.
And good on them. That's what we used to do, you know.
Yeah.
But you raise an interesting question, Greg. How safe are they on the road?
Oh, well, they're very safe as far as
they're impeccably safe, Spanner Man. Anyway, what's moving up on. Next?
Shouldn't we have something, though, like a motorcycle awareness month?
Look at he's on today.
Someone said the word segue to him at some point.
Well, the truth is we're all just back from the launch of Motorcycle Awareness Month.
We are.
Now,
what was that all about, Grant?
Well, it was raining so heavily it was hard for me to tell from where I was standing.
It was cold, wet and miserable, but still hardy people came along.
Yep. The organisers did a terrific job setting it up. If it hadn't been so wet, it was held in Geelong, which meant that if you were advertising it in Melbourne, the people would have woken up, rolled over, looked at the weather report, and rolled over and gone back to sleep.
Yeah, it was dismal.
Yeah, and it's one of the problems with any kind of outdoor event in a place like Victoria. You know, you can't rely on the fact that it's going to be good weather.
But that was the negative. What were some of the positives that came from the day?
The coffee was free. They had a coffee van that was free.
Yeah, that was all right.
Spinning the wheel thing.
Now, what was the spinning the wheel thing?
Well, the prizes were terrific. There were $250 clothing vouchers.
Why didn't I spin that wheel?
Well, I didn't do it either, but I watched a lot of people do it. But
it's like the CEO winning the footy tipping competition.
Well, I know.
Not a good look.
It would have been embarrassing if you had won. But
yeah. Sorry to interrupt you. The other night, I just remembered I went to the Ducati Panigale V4 reveal in Melbourne the other night, and they're like, one of you lucky people will get a ride with Troy Corser on the
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Not again.
you won. Right. That's right. Yeah. We hadn't spoken about that.
Oh, yeah, I guess not. I went on a pillion ride with Troy Corser around the island on an Aprilia 20 V4. It was really cool. Check out our video, a dear audience. Yeah.
Now, Motorcycle Awareness Month, Grant.
I haven't finished with the prizes. $50 fuel vouchers. Right. Now, to be able to spin the wheel, you had to answer 10 questions on your phone. So people would do that. And obviously it's part of an education campaign, you know, get people to answer the 10 questions, the road safety questions.
Yeah.
All right, you've got 10 out of 10. Have a go at spinning the wheel. And things like that make an event.
You never would have got the 10 out of 10.
No, I think it was 15 questions. You had to get 10 right.
I might have
gone close to that.
Yeah, you would have done that. Yeah.
But we had a good time. There was enough people there to make it worthwhile. Good speakers.
And shout out to Brian Ricks too, who is a personal friend of Infomoto and ourselves, but puts a lot of work into motorcycling.
Certainly does.
Feels like he's making changes from within, you know.
Yes.
Sometimes you have to play the corporate game a little bit, but ultimately if you want positive change, and we do want to be recognised as motorcyclists.
He's in the tent. We've got
a man on the inside.
We've got a man on the inside, and he's a good bloke, Brian, and he is an absolute motorcyclist.
Oh,
he's hardcore.
The quintessential long-distance motorcyclist.
A daily rider.
And likes a long trip, world traveller.
Worships a long trip.
So a good bloke. Not a bloke I'd want to arm wrestle.
No.
I think I'd lose.
I'd have him.
Well, I don't know.
Sorry, Brian. Sorry, Brian.
He has a long history in physical combat, and I probably shouldn't tell you this story. But
oh no,
he's got a swimming pool at his house, and it's graduated so that there's a shallow end and a deep end, and he's a bit shorter than me.
Innovative, Grant.
Yeah, well, otherwise this story wouldn't work. But I figured we were having a bit of a wrestle in the pool, and I danced him down to where he couldn't put his feet on the ground, and I just swept his legs out from under him and held him underwater, strangling him while he was trying to drown.
As you do when you go to a barbecue.
An admission of guilt, is this? No, what's going to be played back in the courtroom?
What happened next, I still can't work out, but I became aware that I was lying on the bottom of the pool with his foot on my throat. I don't know how he did it.
Yeah, no.
I don't know how he got the upper hand, but there I was lying on the bottom of the pool, his foot on my throat, and I was trying to tap out, but where he comes from, they don't take any notice of you tapping out. You either win or you lose. You know?
You fight to the death.
Yeah, so none of us are going to take him on. But he's a terrific guy and a great asset to the Motorcycle Awareness Month. And the amount of knowledge he brings to that committee, the practical knowledge of being a real-world motorcyclist is of enormous benefit to us.
Yeah, it was good. I didn't mind it, except I got really wet.
Yeah, we got wet, yeah.
Oh, but... I have my new Merlin stuff on, Spence.
Oh, yeah.
I have to blatant.
You got to dirty that stuff up a little bit, mate.
Blatant plug of the Merlin. Now, if you want adventure gear, get stuff made in England because it's freezing friggin' cold and snowing. So I put on my Merlin gear and I get a suntan. That's how warm it is. So I was happy to be dry, but that Geelong Road on a wet day, that just doesn't – it's no fun.
Yeah.
That is no fun.
I know you didn't mean that to be a plug, but you did. Well, we should shout out that gear has proven really, really good stuff, hey?
Yeah, no, very good.
It takes a bit to impress you too because you do those long Ks and you find out the problems.
I'm fussy and I like understated gear. I don't like mad colours and flashes.
That's
what
Travis
I like
Pastrana
about it.
Pastrana thing is never going to suit you.
No, it doesn't do me any good. So, bit of a plug there, but I am very happy with that stuff.
Speaking of... product, your new 1300 was filthy as a result of that riding in the rain.
Well, Grant, you know I am hardcore.
Well, I know, and you're not scared to get it dirty.
Well, I didn't ride the 1300 down there, but it was on another day.
Well, whatever you rode was so dirty, I thought it was the 1300.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, it was only an R18.
They're very similar.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. They're boxes.
Yeah, big boxer.
Yeah, big boxes.
Yeah, auto glim. Now... Auto glim, Grant.
He didn't even say it.
Oh,
now auto glim.
Of course. Glim. Why didn't I think of that?
He's a Segway king, isn't he? Spencer's just dropped his wallet. Look out. Yes, auto glim. Now, auto glim is the sponsor, Grant, of this fantastic podcast.
I'd forgotten.
And in order to keep them sending us some money and product, I reckon we should mention them.
Auto glim.
It is good
stuff.
And Fair Income. I know they do send us a box of stuff, but I use everything and I go mad with it. I reckon I'm glowing from the stuff that's all over me. But the GS comes up brand new and it always allows me to trade it in for more than I've paid for it.
Yes.
Every time I sell a motorcycle.
Yeah.
Because as you know, I'm very good at selling and buying things.
Yeah, you're among the best. Yeah.
Yeah, for the people that buy them.
Or among the most frequent.
Yeah.
Perhaps not right. Among the best, but...
Auto Glim, good stuff. And we're wrapped to have them.
Remember the job it did on my Tingate SR500?
Well, it came up beautiful. It came up...
Turned it from another old bike in the shed to my pride and joy again.
What a nice bike that is too. Is well, it going
yeah,
now?
Yeah. Well, it's always been going.
Well, it's sort
not
of.
Not at Broadford that time.
He's scared to get on the track when I'm out there.
At Broadford.
Every never. Time I'm on the track, oh, he pulls a hamstring coming down the race.
Isn't that true? I could have sworn at Broadford.
Yeah, I'll be at Broadford.
Yeah, he was there, but you were in the paddocks there for...
In the hospitality tent. Yeah.
Regaling people.
And if it was past about 10:30 in the morning, they wouldn't have let me on the track anyway.
You should have seen me at the TT.
Although I did enter the tin gate in the Geelong Sprints.
Yeah, that's right. Did you ride it?
Yeah.
How'd it go?
Oh, not brilliantly, because it was about 45 degrees.
Right. And
the general event was very well handled, but you had to sit at the start gate in the sun in your leathers.
No, I have done that
event. Yeah, and it was for over half an hour, and the only way I could get the SR started at that stage was on a roller, so I couldn't turn it off. And I could
getting pretty warm.
I could hear the aluminium dripping onto the road. So by the time I actually got to do my first run, the engine was too hot to be fast. But the second run was all right. Yeah. So yeah, it's good. It goes. And not only does it go, it now looks like it goes, thanks to
Autoglim.
Now, what else are we talking about, Grant? Oh, we've done EICMA. Now, MotoGP, I wanted to bring this up. This is a bit of a bugbear of mine, and I won't win any friends. The AusGP is upcoming, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the weekend.
At Phillip Island. And we've all, I mean, I've been to so many of them. I've been to more of them than they have put on, I think. I'm a little bit.
Well, yeah, remember that time we went a week early?
Oh, tell that story, Smith.
Oh, well, I've
forgotten about that.
That's the sum of it, really. But we packed up the AU Falcon.
Took one of your mates.
Tense, brought my mate along. We got halfway down that road. What's that town with the big dolphin fish? Maui Maui. They got a bakery. It starts with L. It's on the way.
Lee and Gather.
Possibly. Oh, you know what? We saw the
Lang Lang.
We saw the Supercross there one time. They got a big
Turridan.
Turridan.
And starts with L.
I think one of us said, "It's not many bikes this year."
We're going to be in a good spot on the fence.
We saw a billboard, and it's next week.
Had to take his mate home to their parents to say, "Look, yeah."
So research has always been one of your fortes.
Dickhead.
It's why you're so high up in the Parthenon of.
I think you're probably working too. You probably had a media pass.
It was really easy to get because you were the only person there.
There's another story which I won't go into too much, but I had got a great mate of mine, James Young, through his birthday party. I got the week wrong, and I looked very embarrassed walking into the St Kilda Bowls Club, which was not a party joint that night. It was a bowls club, dressed as Alice Cooper.
Right.
So my history of going to things at the wrong time. It's not that I go to the wrong time. They put them on at the wrong
time. They put them on at the wrong time.
Classic fuck up.
Classic fuck up.
Yeah.
That's the problem with the meddling bureaucracy.
The meddling bureaucracy, Grant.
One of the things about the GP, though, one of the minor controversial issues is that they're not paying for Wayne Gardner this year.
Yeah, I saw that. He had a whinge too.
He had a red hot whinge.
What's the story there?
Well, he's always been a special guest of
as
the
he should be
Grand Prix Corporation. Well,
he started the whole thing, didn't he?
He won the first
pretty much
the first race there in 1989. 87? Was it 87 or 89?
Well, 89 he won the championship. 87 was the race, I think.
Well, for the full story, we've got Snags. The greatest motorcycling moments of all time on infomoto.com.au.
Oh, okay. And that would
Snag
be one
can't
of them.
Remember it, but he probably did when he wrote
I
it.
I can bury mine.
Oh, no.
Anyway.
No, I better not do that.
The fact that he won, and it was a fabulous race, and I was there. I watched it, and I was really impressed. You know, he raced hard and fast, and he did, you know, what I've done on occasions too, where you decide, oh, I'm not going to be able to win this. So I'll just relax and I'll take a lower place. And then after a couple of laps, you find you're still in the fray. You think, oh, maybe I can win it. And that's what he did.
Mm. Oh, so he settled for a podium spot or something? Or
No, he he decided that he'd just relax and not try and stay at the very front. And he found after a few laps that he was still there. He was still up with the guys at the very front, and decided, oh, well, I'll put my head down and have a go. And he won it. And it made such a huge difference to motorcycle racing in Australia, and made a huge difference to people's interest in MotoGP. But he's not there anymore.
So what happened, as far as you're aware, with this?
On that race?
No, with Wayne, because he complained about it.
This is a little bit difficult, but the impression I get is that he's always been invited, pretty much as an ambassador.
He used to do a bit of a wavy lap.
He'd do a few things.
Mick used to do it too.
He'd be around, he'd be a celebrity at the event. And with events like that, and particularly...
Well, it is called Gardiner Straight.
Yes, it is, yeah. But events like that, particularly if they're being televised internationally, you want a few celebrities there. You want them to be able to wander around before the race or after the race and get footage of Agostini or
Keanu Reeves at Misano or something or whatever. Correct. Yeah. It's a bit of fizz for the normalos.
But I guess, what is it, 30 years now? Since?
87, 89. I can't work it out.
80, 20, 25 years.
No, 35
years. They struggle financially with it still. I mean, it's a really big event for Victoria to have a round of the MotoGP here, but it's not the same as having it in any of the European circuits where they can get crowds of 120,000, 130,000 people.
Well, perhaps if they put some concrete around there and didn't have you standing
and
up.
And a dunny.
Yeah, and a dunny, and didn't have you stand up to your knees in mud. That might help.
Yeah, but I guess that's related to how much money they've got to spend to get the circuit up to that.
Yeah,
and if they're not making enough money out of it.
Well, that comes under the heading of, we can't afford this.
We can't afford it. Well, we can, but I don't think we can afford it the way the Europeans can.
No. I mean, I'm glad it's here.
You know what it is, Snag?
What is it?
It's adequate.
It's adequate.
It's adequate.
Which is normally good enough for you, mediocrities.
you know, old saying...
adequate is good enough.
Good enough isn't.
Yeah, that's right. Near enough's good enough.
Yeah. You were telling me before we came on air that you thought the interest in MotoGP in Australia was waning a little?
Waning Gardner.
Waning Gardner. Waning.
No, journo, huh?
I don't think it... once again, it's the danger of... having a sample of one, and so because I've got an opinion of how I'm feeling about it, it must be what everyone else is feeling. So I could be completely wrong here, but it just seems to me that we haven't got an Aussie anywhere near the front. Jack Miller's great. We love Jack Miller, but Jack Miller's an also ran. We used to have Casey and we had Mick and things like that.
Oh, the glory days.
We haven't got Jorge and Valentino hating on each other. We haven't got Casey showing everybody that you can win on a Ducati back when no one else could. It just seems to me that it's a bit dry and austere, and even the racing now is a little
bit processional. Like a homogenisation almost.
Yes, and weren't you saying, certainly on a cultural and ethnicity basis, there's only, what were you saying, Jack Miller's the only
Jack's the only non-European, apart from... the occasional Japanese rider.
Yes.
And they're often wild cards or...
No American.
No Americans.
Amazing, isn't it?
That is kind of crazy.
Well, you know, when you compare it with when MotoGP was popular in Australia, where it was essentially the Americans fighting the Australians.
Yes. Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, and the Europeans...
Not that it has to be that way.
No, it doesn't.
I just don't think that younger people have got less reason... To tune into MotoGP than perhaps we had.
What about Taka Nakagami?
He's the one.
He's the occasional Japanese.
Oh, I see.
He's the one. He's been a factory rider, but he's
Honda man.
He's finishing.
He's on the way out, isn't he?
No, he's finished.
Right.
That's on the way out, isn't it?
He's becoming the test rider for Honda.
Right.
For their development.
Well, I don't know. I just the proof's in the pudding, but. I'd be very surprised if they get a huge crowd down there.
I think it does come down to the personality thing, because obviously we always watch the MotoGP because it's part of our job, and I love it. It's in my blood, but it doesn't feel like it used to. It's sort of, which Ducati's going to win today, kind of thing.
I feel a bit that way, but you have to wonder whether that's the event or yourself.
Yeah, oh, who knows.
And it's hard to know.
Or the fact that it's 2:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
If you want to watch it live.
Yeah.
Well, the last few races, I'm probably going to piss off a lot of people here, but...
Well, what's changed?
I'm flat out getting to the end of it. You know, like, just about I'm dropping off. Well, that never used to happen.
If Martin's leading by 8 bike lengths... You might as well go to bed.
There's 4 red bikes in the front, and they're about 3 lengths apart.
Oh, well, although there are plenty of surprises too.
Yeah, Pedro Acosta's been interesting to watch.
Yes,
yeah. He's had some bad luck. That's a sort of a new. You've always said that.
Well, that's KTM, isn't it? Yeah, KTM. Yeah. Gas painted gas, KTM. Gas.
Yes. Yeah. You've often said that with really good riders, they crash a lot before they find their success.
Before they get fast.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's some few examples of
all
that.
All the greats have done that.
Yeah.
Mick did it. Marquez did it. Valentino did it.
Yeah. They sort of right there ahead of themselves. They know what they've got.
They crash their brains out for a season or two.
But to have a KTM that close to the front.
Oh, yeah.
And given that the factory KTM team, you know, comes, you know, 7th or 8th or 11th or 12th. The factory isn't up the front.
Yeah, that must annoy.
Well, he tossed it down the road like the other day.
Twice.
Yeah. But that's why I said that, you know. Like, he's got the pace, I think, but I guess there's other experience base.
To finish first, you must first finish.
Indeed.
Anyway, you guys will be down there. Bells on, giving out free Infomoto equipment.
Of course.
Yeah, come and say hello.
Talking to the punters.
Yeah, no, I love that.
We'll have that's one of those. What are those big blow up things that they had out the front of car dealerships forever?
They've got I look like that when I've been down there on the Sunday. Yeah. I get a few beers in. I look like one of those. Now, probably one of the last things I want to talk about, Spence, is people going down to the Oz GP. Now, right now, there is in Victoria a motorcycle blitz from our friends in blue. So we're telling you about that. Be careful out there. But I'm kind of annoyed about these blitz things. I've never liked them.
Can you explain that to our international audience?
Well, when I say a blitz, it just means that there's a concentration of policing and enforcement that is pointed towards motorcycling.
Well timed with the motorcyclist awareness month.
MotoGP time it comes up.
A regular basis. Where did you hear this? What's your source?
I saw it on the internet.
Oh, okay.
Oh, well, that's clear cut.
Yeah.
No, it's actually happening, I'm sure of it.
Yeah.
I think it was the ABC website I read it on. And what I'm a little annoyed about is that fatalities are up. I mean, the bottom line is fatalities are up. But
is that a new chain?
Yeah.
Fatalities are
up.
It is.
Fatalities are up. But the collection of information and statistics is flawed in that it takes into account people that have a crash or both in fatalities and injury that have no license, that are on an unregistered motorcycle, and we call them unriders. Now, as far as I can say, they're not motorcyclists.
No.
They're
criminals.
Idiots. Yeah, they're criminals.
Yeah.
So if you pull the numbers back to actual motorcycling, that gives you a true reflection of where we're at. So whilst fatalities are up, I look strongly into the statistics as to why we've got coppers pulling people up left, right and centre when responsible motorcycles deserve better.
You did some research on this kind of along those lines recently, didn't you, Spanner Man?
I did, yes.
Tell us about that, Grant.
Relative to the road toll from the 1970s, the statistics indicate that we're doing better. Using Victoria as an example, it went from something like 1,100 deaths a year down to what it is now, around 300. Motorcycle fatalities have declined as well, but there's been a spike this year.
I think it's 50-odd in Victoria.
Yeah.
Three.
63. I know. I think that's significantly higher than.
If you look at a graph though, going from 1970, it's a downward trend.
Oh, of course it is.
And this is an abnormal spike. I mean, I think it's only sensible to look at why. To have some go at analysing it to see if there's something.
Oh, because speed kills, Grant.
Could be done better. Well, don't get me started on that.
Yeah. Well, how would you know?
But
you walked right into that, Spanner.
I did. But to have a blitz on motorcyclists, as if the few things that police can actually enforce, is it going to make any difference? Now, my argument will be that most motorcyclists die because they hit fixed objects when they fall off. It's probably a third or a little bit more than that. Now, the police don't design or build roads.
No.
So there's nothing they can do about that.
No,
like,
true.
The blitz isn't going to stop that happening.
No.
The things that a blitz can do is it can look at drug riding, drink riding and speeding. And then you've got to ask, well, what is the component of motorcycle crash deaths related to those three things? And that's misleading as well. Mm. Somebody who has alcohol in their system, it's recorded as an alcohol-related death.
Regardless of the number.
Know? Yeah, how do you know?
The guy might have been sitting at the traffic lights and been run over by a garbage truck.
Yeah.
And it's an alcohol-related death. Mm.
Yeah, look, I don't see focus on speed particularly.
Ridiculous.
Ever making a significant
difference. Ridiculous. No. Anyway, look, it pisses me off. And I'm all for safety. Safety, that's what Motorcyclist Awareness Month is.
We're always massive proponents of wearing all the gear all the time, you know, looking after your motorcycle, not being a dickhead.
We have a vested interest in actually surviving.
Yeah, we want to be safe on our motorcycles, yes. And we want everyone else to be safe on their motorcycles. But this hyperfixation on speed is just irrelevant.
It's madness. So that's my rant for today, Grant. Yeah, I just wanted to.
And can I just say that your definition of non-riders being criminals? I was one till I was 17.
Yeah, well,
I did all those things you just said are terrible.
How does that discount what we said being right?
Yeah, well, I just that where I live, there's a couple of kids who muck around in the bush and make a lot of noise and annoy all the locals, and I disapprove of them as well. But I can't bring myself ever to report them.
They're not who
because
there's a motorcyclist out here. Yeah.
They're not who I'm talking about.
They'll just come and lock you up, Spanner.
Yeah, probably.
Kids mucking around in the bush, I get it. I was one, still am.
Yep.
It's the idiots on
pocket
bikes.
Context is king. Stolen bikes. Context is king.
Yep.
But it would be very nice to see more accurate and better targeted research and to have the government institutions focusing on the real cause of motorcycle deaths and not just the things they can enforce.
And the ones that they happen to be able to get some money out of.
Well, that's a happy byproduct as far as they're concerned.
Well, unfortunately, part of this blitz is the police educating us. So when you've stopped, they'll come and have a chat to you. Now, as far as I'm concerned, they could jam that up their jumper because I've got mates I want to talk to. I don't want to talk to a bony-fingered copper.
All right, now.
Right, we'll move. Moving right along.
This has been the Infomoto podcast presented by Autoglim. Snag's still yelling at a cloud over there.
Sorry.
Thank you very much, everyone. We'll be back soon. Rock and roll.
Bye.